This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. If you'd asked brothers Jim and William Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain back in, say, the late 90s, if they'd still be together releasing albums in 2024, there's a big chance that they would have said no. But here they are, four decades after releasing their debut album, Psycho Candy, putting out a brand new record that harkens back to their beginnings in Scotland called Glasgow Eyes. Today, lead singer Jim Reed joins me to talk about that album, about the legacy and influence of those early Jesus and Mary Chain records, what motivated them to start making music more than 40 years ago, and what motivates them to keep making it now. He also gets into stage fright, playing shows sober, and forever being misfits in the music world. But we start with a song that he wrote about a dramatic night in 1998 when Jim and William got in a fight during a show that spelled the end of the band for almost a decade. From their new album, Glasgow Eyes, this is The Jesus and Mary Chain with J-A-M-C-O-D.
The monk is organ grinder, isn't grinding anymore. And I can't shake the feeling that I dream before. Can up and then falling down, but it pops down to the door. And I can't see the ceiling, cause I'm face down on the floor. Tears are what you want, tears are what you've got.
On World Cafe, you just heard Jesus and Mary Chain, a song from their new album, Glasgow Eyes. I'm Raina Duris, here with Jim Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain. Jim, welcome to the World Cafe.
Hi, thanks. Thank you.
I know that J-A-M-C-O-D is about a specific night in the late 90s. It was a show that you guys played at House of Blues mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, and you broke up after that show. Could you tell us what happened?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people probably understand the... I mean, the relationship between me and William, my brother, had been deteriorating for quite a while before that particular show, and it just built up to the point where blows were exchanged. There were a lot of alcohol was consumed, there were drugs, and it just all went a bit... I kind of got to a point where I basically could barely stand up, and I found myself in the middle of this space, and I saw William, and I went to scream at him. I was trying to strangle him, and then I turned around and I looked and I thought, oh, we're on stage, this is a show. And that was it, you know, that was the end of the band, and the audience had to be refunded. Yeah. And it was just an ugly night of drugs, debauchery of all different kinds. And it was the end of the band at that point.
We'll come back around to when the band got back together. But I know that the breakup happened not long after you released your album, Monkey. And you and William weren't really getting along when you were making Monkey either. So say I walked into the studio while you were working on that album. What was the energy like in there?
Well, I mean, the record took much longer to record than we had planned it to. I mean, the idea was to knock out an album in 6 weeks, just get on with it, no fuss and no bother. And I'd say, you know, it took about a year to make that record. So from the six-week plan to a year, it was just not quite how we had imagined that it would go. Some point in the middle of the process, we just couldn't be in the same room together. So at the end of the album, the making of the album, it was him going in with the rest of the band, me going in with the rest of the band, and that was how the album got finished. And weirdly, I mean, it should sound like one of the worst records we'd ever made, but it isn't. I think it sounds like one of the best records we've ever made, but unfortunately, the Mary Chain at that time were, I mean, we were always outsiders, but by that stage of the game, in the UK it was Britpop, in the US it was grunge, and somehow the Mary Chain seemed to be stuck outside looking in on both of those scenes, and there was a party going on and we weren't invited.
Yeah.
So the record came out, nobody bought it.
It's true, though, that it does not sound like you were both going in separately at the end to make that record. You'd never know it by listening to it.
Yeah, I mean, the music never suffered. I mean, we threw things at each other for a time. We hated each other, but it doesn't come across in the music. Yeah. In some ways, it may even have made the music better, because there was a kind of a, you know, sort of try to outdo each other, think kind of a thing going on. So it may have made it a better record. I don't know. But anyway, it was a damn good record. I just wish that more than 25 people would have bought it.
Well, I could play something from Monkey right now. I'm going to play some music from the album Monkey.
Some said I was a freak.
That was from Monkees, the Jesus and Mary Chain on World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras. I'm here with Jim Reid. You and William reunited to play shows again in 2007 after being broken up for a few years there. How did you get to a place where that felt possible?
Well, I mean, it took some time. I mean, we didn't talk to each other for a couple of years after that breakup. I mean, the arguments towards the end, I mean, there were things that were said that shouldn't have been. You know, once you say these horrible things, can't take them back. So that took time for those wounds to heal, sorry. We had people in the background that were sort of trying to get the band back together. Coachella were making, year after year, were making an offer. I didn't think he would be up for it. He didn't think I'd be up for it. And then one night on the phone, we were talking about it, and it became apparent that each of us was not doing it because we thought the other wouldn't be into it. And so we kind of thought, well, should we give it a go? We weren't sure whether it was going to work. You know, at that time, we were getting along okay, but he was living in America, I was living in the UK. So the idea of going back into a rehearsal room and actually making Mary Chain music again was a bit weird. And that was how we decided to play it. We thought, well, we'll book a studio, we'll play those songs again, and we'll see if anybody dies. And if nobody does, maybe we can play a show. And we, you know, the first few hours, it was a bit scary because we did immediately start screaming at each other.
Really?
And the rest of the band are like, oh, God, not this again. And they all left the room. So we kind of thrashed things out, just me and him, for a couple of hours. Started to realise that, you know, if we go back to the way it was in the 90s, we might as well just pack up and go home now. So we talked to each other and just, you know, we said the right things. Look, let's not blow it. This could work out. This could be good for both of us. Let's give it a serious try. And so that's what we did. The rest of the band came in, we played those songs, and it was weird. It was like we'd never been away, and it just felt like right. And so we thought, try it in front of an audience. And it was never meant to be a reunion. It was like it could have been for one night only. But as it turned out, we both enjoyed it. People seemed to think it went down okay, so...
And it was another decade until you actually released a new album. I mean, in 2017, came back with Damage and Joy. And were you kind of worried to get into the studio again just to play the old songs. When it came time to write new songs, where was your head at?
It was always the plan to do another record. I mean, that's what bands do. Bands make records. And I was the one that was sort of dragging my heels, I guess, a bit over that. The making of Monkey was still horribly recent to me. It was 9 years, but it felt like it was like 2 weeks. And I thought, well, we're getting on okay right now, so we get back into this. Making a record is an incredibly claustrophobic environment. And I thought, well, if we're doing so well, if we go and make a record now, it could all just go down the tubes. So I kept making excuses why not to go into the studio, till it got to a point where I just thought, this is ridiculous. We're becoming one of these nostalgia acts playing your greatest hits. And so I said, well, let's do it. Let's make another record. That was it. And it went really well. We didn't argue, at least not too badly. It just went according to plan, really.
When it came time to do this new album, Glasgow Eyes, you recorded it in Glasgow, where you were born and not too far from where you guys grew up in East Kilbride. Why did you want to go back home to make this album?
I mean, it was kind of by accident. There was a danger that it wasn't going to get finished. And it was our manager, David, said he used to manage Mogwai, and he's still good friends with him. And so he sort of thought that if we get into the right environment, a studio where we feel absolutely comfortable, that would be it. We'd get the record done. And so he suggested the Castle of Doom, as it's called, in Glasgow. And we went there, and it was great. It was great. We felt instantly at home, and it was comfortable. And Tony Dugan, the studio engineer there, he's like one of us that we had just never met before. He just like same record collection, knows all your reference points. So we went there, and it felt good. And so the record got done pretty quickly as soon as we hit Glasgow.
I'm speaking with Jim Reid of the Jesus and Mary Chain on World Cafe. I want to play another song from Glasgow Eyes now. It's called The Eagles and the Beatles. And you note in this song that you grew up with the Beatles. You never actually mentioned the Eagles in the actual lyrics. What can you tell us about this one?
You'll have to talk to my brother about that. That's his song.
Well, here's, I guess you can answer for me. There's that age-old question. Do you prefer the Beatles or the Stones?
I prefer... The Beatles on Monday, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, the Stones on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays, and the Velvet Underground on a Sunday.
Perfect. Let's take a listen. From their new album, Glasgow Eyes, here's the Jesus and Mary Chain, the Eagles and the Beatles on World Cafe.
I've been rolling with the Stones, making Keith and Brian Jones, Bill and Charlie have gone home.
On World Cafe, you just heard the Jesus and Mary Chain, the Eagles and the Beatles, a song from their new album, Glasgow Eyes. I'm Raina Duris, joined by Jim Reid of the Jesus and Mary Chain today. I saw you say somewhere that when you were young, you would look at the Rolling Stones and you'd think, oh, they're still touring. I'll never be doing that at that age. So the Rolling Stones are still touring, and so are you. Do you still think that there's a cutoff?
No, I actually don't. I mean, now that I've become quite old myself, I realise now that it's what it's about is it's about if you've got a record to make that you can totally believe in, and whether you can go on stage and put a show across that doesn't feel bad. You know what I mean? If you're out there and you're playing these songs and they sound great and people look like they're into it, and we're into it, and you kind of think, well, why wouldn't I want to do this? And, you know, yeah, the Stones took a lot of flack for being those oldies, older than everybody else, and they still are. But you know, I totally get it now. Why would you want to stop doing something that you're completely into? And, you know, if we didn't have a record, if we were sitting with this record thinking, oh, Christ, it's just not that good, oh, let's just stick it out, we would never do that, you know. if you're in a band, I've always felt that you have to feel like you're the best band in the world, or there's no point of doing it. And the day that we stop feeling that way will be the day that we stop making music. We'll stop touring, stop making records when we feel that somebody else is doing it better than we are.
Yeah. I mean, even if you do feel like you're the best band in the world, I know that you still get, in your words, terrified before shows, even decades into doing this.
Yeah, I am terrible stage fright. I mean, for years, I could only do it drunk or on drugs. I mean, I just couldn't do it sober. The reason is that I'm basically one of the shyest people that you'd ever meet. And so the idea of having to go up center stage and be this, you know, Johnny Rotten, Iggy Pop character, I just didn't have that in me. You know, that wasn't me. And the only way that it could maybe have been me is if I made an absolute spectacle of myself by getting so drunk or so out of it on drugs that it just looked mental. And that kind of, although it sounds terrible, sometimes it really, really worked. Some of the most intense shows that we played, it was like that. We were all just so wasted. And, you know, the trouble with that is like half of the shows get chucked under the bus because you can't do that every single night and be good. But the nights where it worked, it was amazing, you know. But the trouble is, it's just not reliable. You're going out there and you're thinking, well, is it going to be one of those ones or is it going to be one of those ones? And then after a while, we started to realise, well, you know, there's an audience out there that paid money to come and see us. You can't just go out and you can't go out there saying, well, you might get a good show tonight. So these days, much more sane. I don't drink on tour anymore and I don't drink on stage. William still enjoys a drink, doesn't get wasted. And it's just much more fun, it's much more enjoyable, and it's much, much easier to control what's going on stage. In the old days, I'd be off my head and I'd be standing there and somebody would make a mistake. Might have been me, might have been one of the others, but you just sort of stand there going, like, ugh, I don't know what it is, but something's wrong, and you just kind of, you're in your befuddled state, you just kind of, the whole thing just, it starts to disintegrate all around you because nobody knows how to come back from that yeah. screw up, you know? But nowadays it's like, oh, Mark just like missed out a verse, and then you'll compensate because of it. Nobody even notices. So yeah, it's just much more enjoyable, much more easy to control now.
I thought it was pretty incredible that the first sober gig you did was at Coachella in 2007, which I feel like the pressure in front of that many people for the first time you're playing together in so many years, like that would be, you put yourself at the expert level of sober show playing right away.
Well, I mean, I was beyond terrified for that show. I mean, it was utterly terrifying. I mean, you got to remember, it's like first show for 9 years. First sober show ever. And then we've got Scarlett Johansson coming on stage with us that night. And I was like, sort of, give me a drink. And you're like, no, I can't do that. So I just got on with it. And, you know, I shut my eyes a lot on stage. If I'm shutting my eyes, it means that I'm terrified. And that's what I did for pretty much that whole show. I just stood there, like, eyes shut. Forget there's an audience there and just lock into the band. That was it.
I think... when I learned that you became the lead singer of the band because you lost a coin toss, I was like, that really underlines how shy you might be.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's absolutely true. Everybody says, oh, that's not true. It is true. That's what happened.
I'm speaking with Jim Reid of the Jesus and Mary Chains Day. They have a new album called Glasgow Eyes. There's a song on Glasgow Eyes called Chemical Animal. It seems like it's about addiction and drug abuse. What is it like to revisit that part of yourself or that time of your life?
I mean, I don't mind. It's kind of weirdly therapeutic now because it's well behind me. So, and sometimes it's just weird to think that I used to live like that because, it absolutely, what it says in the song, it's like you almost stop becoming human. You're just like existing to get wasted. And it's no way to live. And I lived like that for years and years and years. And now much more sort of like sane and much more normal. And you look back on these times and you think, how could I have done it? How did I live like that?
Let's listen to it. Here's Chemical Animal. It's the Jesus and Mary chain on World Cafe. Cafe. I'm Raina Duris, and joined today by Jim Reid of the Jesus and Mary Chain. That song you just heard is called Chemical Animal. It's from their new album, Glasgow Eyes, coming out almost four decades after the Jesus and Mary Chain first put out an album. Your debut, Psycho Candy, turns 40 years old next year. When you guys made that album, when you were working on it beforehand, when you started the band, you were not excited by the things you were hearing on the radio. I think you've said you were disgusted by the things you were hearing on the radio. Why? What did you want to change?
Well, I mean, we grew up listening to, you know, glam rock and then punk rock. And before that, you know, the Beatles and stuff. And, you know, we couldn't understand how we'd gotten from the Rolling Stones singing Satisfaction, you know, through to Johnny Rotten singing Anarchy in the UK to Karma Chameleon. You know, what? I mean, what happened? Do you know? So something, I mean, there was good music around that time, but it had all been pushed underground. I mean, the kind of music that we were into that made us want to make music in the first place was no longer mainstream. And what was mainstream was just hideously unacceptable, like Duran Duran and, you know, Spandau Ballet and all that kind of crap. And we just thought, well, the only way that we can change this is to, if we do it ourselves, you know, get out there, you know, sort of show people how it's done again. And that was it. I mean, we were, you know, like, well, what was your inspiration? People would say, well, we were inspired by all of the diarrhea that was like spewing out of the radio in 1984.
I wonder why being disgusted is such a great motivator for creativity.
Well, I mean, it's true though. It's like, you know, it's some of the best music is made because, you know, oh, it's like punk rock. Punk rock happened because music had become bloated, and you know, there needed to be a complete sea change, and that's what happened, and that's what we tried to do several years later.
So you released Psycho Candy, and Just Like Honey does pretty well. Charts in the UK, NME names it a track of the year. And now, here you guys are. You're part of the music scene that you were trying to change. You're out of the underground. What do you remember about that time?
Not a lot. for reasons that I've explained. I remember it was very exciting. I remember, like, me and William had spent several years, like, 3, 4, maybe 5 years planning this band. And then it was all kind of like, it was abstract, it was in our heads, it was an imaginary band. And then it became real. And it was like, Christ, you know, I mean, we're going on tour next week, you know, we're going on TV next week. And it was like, oh, this is amazing. And it was like living out your fantasies. And I'd say probably for about the first 6 months of the band, that's what it was like. And then it started to become like more kind of like a job. Mm-hmm. You know, we started to realise that the people that we'd signed a record deal with didn't actually like us. I remember we delivered the album. We took Psycho Candy to Warner Brothers Records and they said, right, so this is a piece of crap. When are you going to record the real record? And we're like, well, this is the real record. And it goes, no. This is just terrible demos. Go away and make it again. And then they started to get all of these session men lined up to play on it. And like producers to come in and be the producer. And we're like, ugh. And that was it. And that was how our relationship with that record company continued. With every record, we had to persuade them to put it out.
I feel like that, would that motivate you to do your own thing even more, I would think?
Well, it was kind of exhausting. That's the only thing, because you think that your job is done when you make the record. You think, that's it, we've done our bit. But it's not. That's only like the first, the actually easy part of it. The rest of it is things like, will you put our record out? Yeah, big arguments about why it isn't actually a piece of garbage. It's good. So eventually you've persuaded them to put the record out, and then it'll be marketing meetings, and it'll be like, so, guys, what have you got planned for us? And going, we had sort of imagined doing absolutely nothing, actually. We're going like, well, can we get an advert in the NME? Nope. And go, well, what budget have we got? Oh, budget, yeah. Maybe give you about 100 quid. That'd be it. And it'd be just everything was like trying to push a gigantic boulder up a mountain. And that was what it was like. That was our relationship with Warner Brothers Records. And it continued. In fact, it got worse.
It did.
It started bad, and then it just continued to get worse and worse and worse.
Well, hold on, because I'm going to play some music. I'll play some music, and then we'll come back and we'll talk some more. I want to play a bit of Just Like Honey from Psycho Candy. It's the Jesus and Mary Jane.
Listen to the girl as she takes on half the world, moving up and so alive in her honey dripping behind. It's good, it's so good, it's so good, so good.
From their 1985 album, Psycho Candy, that was the Jesus and Mary Chain with Just Like Honey on World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. My guest today is Jim Reed from Jesus and Mary Chain. Almost anything written about the Jesus and Mary Chain these days includes the word influential, either in the headline or somewhere very close underneath it. Would those two brothers, you and William, making music 40 years ago, be surprised to be seen as influential?
If I say no, you know. But, you know, the
if you say no, I think it's right, a great answer.
Right. This is what it was, right? We were listening to bands from decades before the, you know, when the band started. We wanted to be like those bands. We used to play little dusty records by bands like the 13 Floor Elevators from Texas in the mid-60s, and we'd be thinking, God, this is amazing. And then we'd be thinking, wouldn't it be great if people dug out our records in Texas in 20 or 30 years' time? And, you know, that was it. That was kind of like, when we were making Psycho Candy, it wasn't meant to be just entertainment for 1985. It was meant to be what it's become. It was meant to be this thing that, you know, you get kids that weren't born that are like making music now because of that record. Job done.
Yeah. These days, how much does disgust with what you're hearing on the radio fuel your songwriting? How much does changing music motivate you guys?
I mean, changing, we never changed music anywhere near as much as we ought to have or tried to. I mean, the idea was, as I said, to fix the radio. 1985, 1984, the radio was broke, so we set about fixing it. We didn't. I mean, the Mary Chain were always swept under the rug, you know. We didn't get played in daytime radio. We always seem to miss the bus. It's what I said earlier about, you know, when Britpop came along, we kind of thought, well, this is it. You know, the kind of bands that should be into the Mary Chain are now mainstream. That's going to open a door for us. They bloody well, they ran through the door and slammed it in our bloody faces. And the same with America, with grunge. We thought, well, I don't know, some of these bands must be into the Mary Chain. And it was the same thing. We were on the outside looking in, thinking, but wait a minute, you know, haven't we been doing this for years? But we didn't change the music scene anywhere near as much as we try to.
Do you still feel like you're on the outside?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The eternal outsiders, that's us.
Do you feel like there are more people taking risks now in music than there were when you were
I don't understand the music business anymore. I don't understand how young bands actually manage to exist. Because in the old days, when I was like starting out, it was you sold records and people bought them, you got paid. Now, I just don't understand how it works. These days, you make a record, people stream it maybe 500,000 times and you get like a bottle of beer or something like that. You know, it's like, I mean, what? I mean, how does it work? Perhaps somebody can tell me because I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And I'm working in it right now and I have no idea. So I'm talking to Jim Reid of the Jesus and Mary Chain on World Cafe. I want to finish off with one more song from the new album. It's a fun one called Girl 71. Jim, what can you tell us about Girl 71 before we hear it?
Hold on, my daughter's just walked in. What is it?
Don't worry.
What is it, Candace?
It's something like I was going to ask you.
Right, I'll be there in a couple of minutes, okay?
Yeah, it's not urgent, don't worry.
Sorry about this.
That's okay.
About Girl 71, it's a song about a relationship and someone who's maybe sort of kind of sliding a bit and, me. Getting back into booze and getting back into my old ways and being redeemed by a new relationship.
Your daughter, does she listen to your music? Does she think that you guys are... Do her friends listen to your stuff?
I've got two daughters and they, for years, they were kind of embarrassed by me when they were little. And they were like, oh, you're in a band. It's so embarrassing. And it'd be like, why don't you make good music instead of that old fashioned rubbish and stuff like that? But now that they seem to be, I wouldn't say they're into my kind of music, but they now appreciate it a lot more. Simone is into drum and bass and Candace is kind of into similar, but she likes kind of industrial type of music as well. But they are now, they've gone from being utterly embarrassed to being quite proud of their old man.
Oh, that's very sweet. Let's hear Girl 71 is the Jesus and Mary Chain of World Cafe.
Girl, I've got you got me, and there's nothing. We got wine, we got nothing, we got wine. But that won't last a day. Well, nothing does, so that's okay. Piss doesn't touch the ground. Give up what you need.
The Jesus and Mary Chain from their new album, Glasgow Eyes. That was Girl 71. I've been talking to Jim Reid of the Jesus and Mary Chain today. Jim, thank you so much for taking the time. I really enjoyed this.
No bother. Thank you, Rena.
I'm Rena Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.
These days, news comes at you fast. But the truth? Getting there takes time.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Embedded is a podcast that takes the time to look beyond the headlines.
How did this happen? How did we get here?
With original documentary storytelling. Listen to NPR's Embedded wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
This message comes from Jackson. Seek clarity in retirement planning at Jackson.com. Jackson is short for Jackson Financial Inc., Jackson National Life Insurance Company, Lansing, Michigan, and Jackson National Life Insurance Company of New York, Purchase, New York.